You have no. This guest right here has known me longer than any other guest that's been on the podcast.
There you go.
Intimately.
Yeah. In many, many ways, people probably have not seen you or been with you. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But you've seen my full journey to where I am.
Definitely.
And I should say, this is my doctor.
Yep.
My pediatrician.
I might be the opening line for some of your shows, right?
Yeah. You were excited though. You weren't mad that I had.
No, not at all. I was like, I was hoping to get to one of your shows. So if you did say that, I could be called on the audience. But see how that worked out.
You said you wanted to do comedy.
I really, I thought about it many times. You know, I think that being in the office, and hopefully you can attest to this, is there is a little bit of routine to what I do, and hopefully there's a lot of humor there. You know, I hopefully bring some knowledge to what I, you know, from my knowledge base to the visit. But I always tell people, I hope it's worth the price of a copay. But I would love to do comedy. But I think that, you know, comedy is not, as you know, it's not simple. There's an art to it, and it's one thing being funny, you know, impromptu, and then trying to be funny, you know, and so that there's definitely a technique.
A big thing about humor is playing into who you are as a character, I think. And that's when you're not trying to be funny.
Yep.
You are funny is when you're like, I'm not trying to be the funny I like. I'm the funny I am.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, if anybody ever says, oh, try to be funny, I can't do it. You know, I just can't do it.
Yeah.
But no, I really appreciate when, like, a mom once said to me in the office one time, does it bother you that only half the people in the room get your jokes? Meaning that the parents do, not always the kids, you know? But, you know, as long as I get a laugh, I'm not shooting for it, but I'll take it.
This was your idea also.
Be a pediatrician or being on? I don't know about that.
I don't know if your parents pushed you on the. But well, you wanted you.
It was oh, did I? Oh, it was me. And now you're putting on me, right? You know, you kept.
I don't want to be this.
You kept DMing me. I'm like, I couldn't ignore it. No. I mean, you know when I'm on Facebook, obviously, because those DMs kept coming quick and nah. So okay, I'll take it as my idea. But thank you for accepting me. Please.
No, I'm happy it happened.
You chose me initially, right? So I'm choosing you right back.
Yeah, exactly. I know. I'm writing this off. Is this covered by MassHealth?
Oh, you know, we can actually take a copay for it. You know,
so, yeah, I'll take a copay.
Although MassHealth doesn't pay me too well, so.
I wanted to be funny. I wanted to be serious. I was trying to think about how I wanted to start this thing.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, this is like a self-help motivation podcast.
Really?
And I think you helped me on my journey to find purpose in a way that you don't probably know. And when I was sad, I didn't have purpose. And I'm very happy now, and I have purpose. And you helped me get on that journey.
I appreciate that a lot. You know, it's like when you go back to see your teacher in high school or somewhere, and you say, you know, you helped me get to where I am, or you made a mark on my path, and that means a lot to me. And I'll accept that, and you're very welcome, and thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
What's your purpose in life?
It's a great question, huh? It's always people. I answer that question with, that's a great question. My purpose in life. I mean, my purpose in life is to be a good person, you know, and to make a mark on those around me, I'd say. And I think that hopefully, you know, that kind of goes to my family, you know, and my work, and that involves not only my patients and families, but the people that I work with. So I just really, I think, a friend of mine came up to me, actually, we were at synagogue about a month ago. I'm pretty active at my synagogue, and he said, you know, did you read about this person that passed away in our temple? And he said he did this, all these things he did. He just changed the world. He said, all I hope for, he said, is that when I leave, you know, this earth, that people say, yeah, he was a good guy, you know, and that's kind of, you know, I think that's kind of how I lead my life, is I just want people to have enjoyed me, and whether that's, again, as a parent, as a spouse, as a pediatrician, you want to make your interactions worthwhile. So,
is that something you've always felt was your purpose?
So I'll go back to my father, who was one of my best friends. He's not with us anymore, and a great father, and he was a rabbi. And what he enjoyed most about that was, I think, just interacting with people. And so I think that trickled down to me. And people always ask me, why did you become a doctor? You know, like, it wasn't because I, you know, surgeons, you know, you're carving the turkey on Thanksgiving, you want to be a surgeon. I like people.
You know? Wait, I think if you want to become a surgeon because you're carving a turkey on Thanksgiving and you're like, I want to do
this is
to
good.
A yeah, that's how you become a scalpel.
But I just really like interacting with people. I think that's a trickle down from my father, who also was he could have been a comedian probably, and you like work in the room maybe, but I just really, like, if I could do this, if I did this job but it didn't involve the interactions, then I wouldn't have done it, you know, and that's probably why, you know, I enjoy what I do.
Is the interactions and the helping people.
It's really...
And the being the...
You know, helping people, you know, you got to say, I'm a doctor, I'm helping people, right? You know, and I think that if I didn't become a physician, I would have become a teacher maybe, or something that interacted with people a lot. And I just really enjoy, like, the cool thing about pediatrics is that I take care of kids, but I also, you know, work with the parents, work with the family. So there's a lot of layers there. And I remember, being in med school, we did a lot of... different rotations, we call them, where we spent time doing surgery, doing psychiatry, doing pediatrics, and I liked them all. And I did a time doing OBGYN, where you would, you know, do all the prenatal care with the moms, and all the obstetrical stuff, and the GYN, gynecological stuff, and then you would go to be at the deliveries, and I liked every rotation I did, all the other specialties, but I despise the OBGYN part, where I didn't like the prenatal. I didn't despise it. I didn't have a good experience, but I didn't like the all the care before. And but I loved the way the babies came out. You know, I just loved that stuff. I loved seeing the parents afterwards. So, I mean, those interactions just really drove me. You know, and I felt like pediatrics had the best mix of kids and adults, you know, and just talk, you know, and even you, and I, you know, I see guys, men and women up to age 26, but a lot of practices don't do that. They stop at 18, they kind of push you on to the adult doctor, and to me, that's like the prime time, right? I've been seeing these kids all these times, right, these babies that I love, and the toddlers, and then the middle schoolers, and the high schoolers, and the college kids, and then the people out of college. I mean, that's just, you know, gravy on it, you know, and because it's a continuum, you know. I just really, really love the interactions, and I just love talking to people, love it.
I was talking to someone who was very high up in the AI field. This is full circle. There's a reason that I'm saying this. Very high up in the AI field. And he was saying that children, there is some nature involved, but children are all the same on some base level. And it's the interactions after they're born that makes them who they are. And that's someone in AI talking about the future and how they see it in the way of technology. But you're someone who works with children and sees that. Do you agree with that statement? How do you feel about that?
So I don't purport to be the smartest person in any room, even here.
You're definitely the
smartest
person.
That's a loaded comment to me. You know, I think about all the research done, and hopefully I'm decently well read on nature versus nurture, and there's so much that we are wired with when we are born, and how that wiring, that genetics, you know, that DNA gets expressed is based on a lot of things in our environment, including, you know, our interactions and our family. I would say no to that. But then the whole topic of AI is extremely interesting, controversial in all kinds of fields, especially mine. I would say that no, kids are not all born the same. As I think about it, no, not at all.
That all brains are different.
100%, 100%, and if it was that easy, then we could prevent a lot of stuff, or adjust a lot of stuff to make sure that we all turn out emotionally and mentally the same. So I'd say no.
I think that is the thing about AI, is it's good in a perfect world to perfect people, but we are different.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm talking about this is you talking about you didn't like dealing with the pre natal.
Yeah.
But you like seeing the children and you like seeing how they grew.
Yeah.
And I think that is a big part in growth is the people around you.
Yeah, yeah.
And they wanting to see you grow. But AI or the future and technology doesn't see it as like human connection. They see it as like we are computers.
Yeah, and we're going to see how that pans out for a lot of things. I mean, I think there's a lot of ways that AI can be applied and work extremely well. But yeah, I don't think it's a perfect situation. You know, there's all this stuff coming out now with like a financial advisor, sort of, you know, where they took, you know, they fed in someone's all their financial information and their goals and their potential and everything, whatever, and their investment, you know, stuff into like an AI system, and versus having a financial advisor give you their advice, what they would do. And the financial advisor still came out a little bit on top, you know, and I think that there's so many nuances to everything. It's just like, I'll go back to medicine, and, you know, it's easy, you know, ear infection, certain antibiotic, but there's still a lot of, you know, things that go into that versus, you know, age, parent preference, allergies, resistance patterns, prior failures, all this stuff. I have antibiotics. I mean, there's so many things that go into it. And I have to take continuing education all the time. And board questions are pretty straightforward. You know, but if you really get into the weeds on things, there's so many differences, ways, so many algorithms you can do. There's a gestalt to it, and I'm not trying to promote my career, but I don't think the AI is going to take away from my career. It may help it a little bit, you know, help me make decisions, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think that if you, as a parent, you know, I'm digressing here, but as a parent, if you said, yeah, my child has a 104 fever, they're 2 years old, and these are the symptoms, and you plug in the AI will say, yes, could be this, call your doctor, right? And then the doctor's still gonna sort through that. But going back to that, I think that we are wired all so differently. Also, even within a family, even twins. I mean, I've had twins born, and they both in the same household, you know, and they physically, emotionally, extremely different. Well, you could say, yeah, you can't really control for everything, but I think that genetically, where there's a lot of mapping there that's different.
Why do you think the twins are so different?
No, I'm just saying these twins were different. You know, they were just were different. You know, they were both. They were these boys, for example, were not like 22, 23. They were different sizes. You know, not height wise, but weight wise, they had different emotional patterns.
But what do you think leads to that? That two people from the exact same household
come
out completely different.
I think that, you know, they, whether or not they were identical, I mean, there's some genetics there. There's probably some DNA, you know, if you get down to the, how they were mapped or wired, you know, maybe how they interacted with their environment, but that's, you know, that's again going to what the AI person's saying. But I think that, you know, I think they're just not every, this is a good example, they're not even twins who could have been, identical, can be turned differently.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a little bit more from within versus, but it could be from, I mean, there's a lot of stuff there, but I just don't think that it's easy to say that the environment changes kids versus, you know, external versus internal.
Why do you think kids are more stressed out nowadays?
Podcasts.
You think
social media.
Podcast. There's been radio shows forever.
Yeah, I know. That's true.
This is just a radio show on a different platform.
I've got a War of the Worlds tape if you want to listen to it. Do you know what that even is?
We should do a real radio show.
Oh, there you go. Oh,
yeah. With here all the Foley art and everything.
Here come the Martians. I have the sound effects too. Right now, like if you asked me, I mean, I look at COVID as the big turning point. Like I think that kids have always been stressed, but I think one thing is we acknowledge that stress or that those emotional issues a lot better than we did years ago. I mean, this is gonna be a big answer probably. There's a lot of kids, people my age, when we were younger, they were stressed or anxious or sad, and the answer from the parents, the pediatricians, were you'll be fine, go get over it, move on, but looking back, a lot of that was anxiety, undiagnosed or diagnosed. There's a lot of adults my age, older than my age, who probably have had undiagnosed anxiety and depression but just kind of moved on, and I think that we acknowledge it better. Again, as a tangent, that to me is one of the reasons there's a much higher diagnosis of autism now, is a lot, because it's as a spectrum, there's a lot of people that probably fell on that, but we never really acknowledge that. So A, I think there's more of it, but two, I think we're diagnosing it better. So I think that we're diagnosing emotional issues, anxiety, depression, OCD, all this stuff better than we used to. On top of that, I think the stresses of society has been immense, especially in the educational process in a lot of towns and cities. Expectations, parental expectations, there's a lot of stuff there. I think COVID just killed it. Like COVID really ramped it up, whether you were 6 years old or 55 years old. I think that put a lot of pressure on people. But the increase in emotional issues is really ramped up, and the need to treat it is huge right now.
So diagnosing it, do you think like your generation who was told not to deal with it, that was a worse way to deal with it than to diagnose it and treat it?
Oh yeah, I mean there's so many. I mean, if you've ever had like the Sunday evening blues before Monday, right? Or the kids that didn't, were really stressed about going to school or speaking in front of the class or social stuff. I mean, people, that's normal. People say, oh yeah, I had that too when I was younger. Yeah, it's normal. You'll get over it. And all these people, no. Now, not, it's just how you support it, maybe, whether it's therapy or, medication, whatever. But I think there's a lot of stuff that was kind of, it's ignored a little bit. I mean, ADHD, for example, there's definitely been an overdiagnosis of it at times. But there are a lot of, kids, young adults who probably had those symptoms, and they kind of took a different path in life. They weren't supported educationally as well, if not pharmacologically. And so I think we do a better job of identifying stuff now. We have to be careful of not over-identifying stuff, because
a lot of people then make that their identity, in a way that it just, they're like, well, this is who I am, so I'm gonna let it hold me back.
Exactly. That's a strong point. I listened to a great piece on NPR once, and someone said, if you quote NPR, you sound smarter. So
you sound wild.
I've actually integrated. In the office, I often will bring in experiences in my life and people in my life, and I'll weave them into my visits. Whether it's my friend from high school who I'm telling people how it's okay to take a little, don't have to be perfect all the time, or don't succumb to the pressure, and it's okay to kind of take the easy route versus the hard route. My friend Mark Burgoyne in high school would say, Dave, lawns are meant to be cut across, meaning it's okay to take that easy path sometime, right? I haven't quoted Bucked Up yet in the.
You probably shouldn't.
But I'm gonna bring it in. I think I might have mentioned. I think I might have mentioned to you without the name in the office about your career path. I think that anxiety, for example, it's okay to be anxious, right? We're humans. This is where there's a book written about this, and it's a great book. And I'm not that well read, but I actually read part of this book, is that it's okay to be anxious, right? We're humans. We're wired to be anxious. Anxiety is a protective mechanism, actually. So, you can use your anxiety sometimes in a productive way. You can, it can drive you to be better. Like, I'm anxious every day. And what I'm anxious about, you asked me if I was anxious about this podcast, and no, I actually love this, I actually like being stressed in that way, whether it's public speaking or being in front, or going into a new situation and having to, mingle with people. That actually drives me. But I'm anxious every day about making sure my office runs well, my patients are happy, I'm running on time, that people walk out with more than what they came in for. That drives me. I wouldn't take medicine for that, right? But I think that if you can utilize, like you're saying, if you don't want to use it as a crutch, or you don't want to make identify you, but if you can, some people just need to kind of, you know, relook at things the way that's, you know, reframe things. Some people need a little, you know, help with therapy, and some people need medication. But yeah, I think that we shouldn't allow it to define who we are. You know, I'm sure even you, maybe even today coming over here today, you know, you were maybe a little nervous, maybe you weren't, but I think, you know, I'm focusing on anxiety, but, you know, when you're complacent, you know, that's when you falter, you know, or when the anxiety gets in the way of you allowing you to do what you want to do, right? You know, but I think that, yeah, I think we have to be careful of not always, you know, going to the easiest pathway, which would be like, you're anxious, you got a problem, you can't do this, you need medication, you know. But I think, you know, we have to just address it the best way.
In layman terms, I'll think about it like food, like anxiety, like food. You can have a little bit of food and that'll help you fuel yourself, or you can indulge in that food, or you can indulge in your anxiety.
Yeah.
And it'll like hold you back to the place where I will be anxious, and then I'll give a day to watching Netflix, and then I'll feel more anxious that I didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Instead of, I like this podcast, I like stand-up, because the shitty thing, excuse my language.
It's okay, I get it.
The bad thing about
life. You've dropped a few bombs in my office, some F-bombs in my office once in a while.
I probably have. With the motivational
But I bleep those out. I bleep those out.
You should have a bleep on the door.
Well, there you go. I need a loud sound machine, because I've had some guys, if not, you know, girls, really go off in the office sometimes, you know, about all kinds of things, you know.
What was I even talking about?
About stand up and anxious and...
Oh, about winning the little battles. Where, like, I like setting... The bad thing about life is when the worst things happen, the most growth usually happens afterwards. That's usually what happens. It's a formula that most people know about. That's why if you've had a lot of people who had really bad childhoods usually are very successful. Because the pendulum has to swing the other way to see... Do you not agree with that?
Well, as you're talking, like, I'm not about over generalizations, because I'm sure there's a lot of people that have had a crappy childhood that didn't succeed, right? But we only hear about the good ones, right? You know, there's all these things, like, you go on Instagram, right? You can flip through, and all these motivational sites, you know, and, like, you know, these great, you know, the trite one is, you know, what doesn't kill me makes me stronger, and all, you know. Yeah, adversity builds you, right? But it's the lucky ones, right?
But isn't anxiety adversity?
Yeah.
Like, isn't that what, like, when you're anxious about something and you don't let it happen, that has conquered you. But if you're anxious about something like going bad and you get past it, then that's the little win. You don't like the over. You don't think that the pendulum always swings the other way.
Oh, it doesn't. It doesn't. But when it does, it's awesome, right? And you hope that everybody who faced adversity, everybody, right, whatever adversity it was, financial, emotional, physical, then could come out winner, right? That's what movies are made of, right? Because everybody, a lot of people face adversity, but there's a lot of people. I mean, we're aware of the ones who had the adversity and succeeded, right? And there's a lot of people who were born with a golden silver spoon in their mouth and succeeded, and there's a lot that didn't, you know. So I think that there's a lot of people who are successful because of where they came from. Specifically, it made them try harder, right?
But do you think those are the people who took control over the situation?
Yes.
Instead of letting the situation take control over them? 100%.
100%. Yeah.
Because it is tough. Do you blame an unsuccessful adult on their childhood?
No. Do you blame them? No. Do you blame it? Well, yeah, I mean, if you're set up for adversity and you can't overcome that, yeah, you can blame it on their childhood. I mean, there's a lot of people who are in really negative places because of how they were treated, what they didn't have. I guess blame would I would modify the word, right? They're not set up with the the tools maybe to make it further, or the ability to make it further because of the adversity they've had. But hopefully they can turn that around.
When you work with children, do you see their future ahead of them?
No. I mean, I I look forward to their growing, maybe, and their growth, and we're always talking about. I mean, I often want to ask, you know, high school sophomores, juniors, without any pressure, what are your plans for after high school? Not specifically college, you know, whether it's work or military or whatever. And I've been asking young kids a lot more now, what do you want to be when you get older, you know? And one of those kids said older. There are some.
That's more sad than funny. I laugh, but then I thought about it.
I often ask kids, who's your favorite superhero? And I always hope they say, my mom, my dad. But there are some kids in the office, young adults specifically, who I say I really look forward to seeing what you accomplish in the future. Like, you have so much potential, right? And I really am excited to see what you become, you know, and where you go with that. I don't really think too far ahead, you know. Maybe because it makes me feel like a little sad that they, you know, that thinking about that, you know, further on. Like even with my own kids, I can't say when they were younger, I wasn't really thinking about what they were going to be, you know. But there are some people that you just really look for. You know they're going to kill it, you know. Like you, I think I made a note in your chat, like, you know, 15 years ago, we'll have the very successful podcast. Like, we'll do stand-up. So
you invented podcasts that day.
Yeah. 20 years ago. Yeah, I also invented cryptocurrency. So back to you, like knowing you growing up, right? I don't know if people, I've listened to some of your podcasts, not all of them.
I don't think anyone's listened to everyone.
No, maybe three. But if I asked you what were you going to be, you know, 20, 15 years ago, A, what would you have said? And B, like, the fact that you're doing this, if not stand-up, just blows me away. In my, I'll let you answer the question, but in my career, I've had two patients do comedy, stand-up comedy, and only one is still doing it, and that's you. So 15 years ago, what would you think you were gonna be?
I think if you asked me that 15 years ago, in my head, I would have thought comedian, but I wouldn't have said it out loud.
Really?
Wow. I went to see Jim Gaffigan on my 10th birthday, when I think about that. And that experience was so incredible. Like, I met him. I don't know, this is a weird thing. I don't have any basis in medicine or knowledge, psychology. Like, you have a very basis in how things actually are, what they become. I just believe that I was born this way, and I think it led me to this path, but I also don't know if that's just what I tell myself to keep going, or if some weird way my equation led me to this point.
Did you ever tell anybody that you wanted to be a comedian?
I used to listen to comedy so much. Mm. And yeah, I don't know if you remember when I got my hockey accident. And I got a really bad concussion when I was like 16 or 17. And I had to lay in a room for like 30 days and just like chill.
Yeah.
And all I did was listen to podcasts for those 30 days. Literally, stand up and podcasts. And coming out of that, I knew. Hmm. That was my life-changing moment right there.
Wow.
Was that head injury. Huh. Yeah.
Jim Gaffigan, huh?
Jim Gaffigan. Also, I want to talk. So many comedians have had traumatic brain or had brain injuries and then done comedy. Isn't that very strange?
That is strange. I wonder if they flipped a switch.
I do think it makes you not care. Or it makes you.
You lose the frontal.
Yeah,
part of
I do think it makes you.
Who else had a TBI?
Rogan, Roseanne. Fucking. There's a list.
That's enough.
There's a list though of a bunch. Yeah,
and you and Gaffigan have really the same type of humor, you know.
He's a little cleaner than
I am.
I'm joking. I'm a little more blue.
But you were a big athlete, right? Because I pictured you because you were a big baseball player.
Mm-hmm.
And he played football. You know that he played.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he played at where he played. Yeah, he played D1 football.
But I didn't like baseball.
Really?
Like, I liked watching it, I think, but I think it was, like, my dad was a D1 athlete.
Yeah,
I wanted to follow after him. Did you ever want to be a rabbi?
Yeah.
But that's not, really what you wanted?
I kind of did. As a kid, yeah. But my dad said, he said, be a doctor would be easier. So I was a doctor.
Do you believe that? that being a doctor was easier?
That's a great, I know they're different, but I just, again, the reason I like would have loved to have been a rabbi, just the whole people interaction. But I think I made the right choice.
What do you think leads to success, though? Like, honestly, what do you think leads to someone finding fulfillment? What do you think leads to someone beating their anxiety or depression? What do you think leads to having someone not hold themselves back to when they're on their deathbed, they're like, damn, I wish I did more?
I think enjoying what you do. You know, I think finding that piece. You know, I was working, you know, you've been with me for a long time. I was at another practice before I started this practice. And I was a partner at that other practice for a long time. And it was a great practice. And actually, it was a good friend of mine who we were talking once. He's actually a psychologist. And he said, Dave, if I could shovel shit into the tide and make a lot of money, I would do that, you know? And he's like, yeah, a lot of money, you know? And I was taking decent money over there, but I ended up not being really happy. Really, it wasn't where I wanted to be. The environment wasn't healthy for me. And I took a big leap and I started this new group. And I was in a pretty rough emotional place leading up to that because of it wasn't an easy extraction from the office. It was good people I worked with, but it just wasn't where I wanted to be. And it was a lot of stress to start a new group. You know, I started this new group, and I was worried, you know, that I wasn't gonna make any money. You know, starting a new practice 5 years ago with the way the healthcare is, and my wife said, you know what, Dave, if you make no money for 2 years, it'll be fine. You know, we're fine. You know, and I was just in a tough place, and I started this group, and the first day we opened up, we were busy, we killed it, people were happy. A lot of staff from my other office came with me, and I've never felt better. Since, and I went into this with the fear of, you know, my other job was comfortable. It was like a money market account, right? I just kind of kept churning, making money, doing my job, going to work, but it just wasn't right for me. And when I took this leap, and I kind of bottomed out with a lot of stress, and I've never been happier. You know, tell people in the office, and it's trite again. You know, find what you do, and enjoy it. And if you enjoy what you do, whatever it is, money, you gotta pay the bills, right? You gotta pay your staff, and you gotta, you know, support your family. But if you're happy, that will make a change a lot. Now that's me. Now I can't say that. You know, I'm sure there are a lot of people who have other stuff going on in their life, and even they have all. Maybe what they have makes them happy, but not happy enough. But I think that one of my keys is find what you enjoy, find what you're good at. I mean, this is what I'm good at, you know, hopefully. And this really drives me. Like, and when I go for a run sometimes, and when I go for a run often, hopefully, and I just see someone I know or someone I randomly know who just says hi to me, waves to me, that makes me feel good. Mm-hmm. It makes me feel really good. I don't know what it is, you know? And, you know, thinking about interacting. Sometimes pre-COVID, we did this a lot. We don't do this much anymore in the office. People would come interview us to see if we want to be their doctor. And I would tell them, you know, we've had this half an hour together, and I really enjoyed meeting with you. I hope you come to the practice. But if you don't, at least we had this interaction, and now we have this relationship. You know, I love that. So I think if you can, it's nice to make a living and good money, but like, I really like, you know, I think you gotta find what makes you tick, you know, and what makes you tick is this, maybe. And what makes you tick is comedy, right? And you realize that early. And thank goodness you found that, because you might have been a D1 athlete, you might have gotten a desk job, right? You know, you might have been worked in media or film, whatever, and you might have been happy, but this makes you happy, right? This makes you really happy.
Yeah.
You know, it's cool. Mm-hmm. It's cool. And you're succeeding. But what is your success, right? Your success is, I don't know how many people follow you now on your podcast, of a billion.
Well, success is how you feel about it.
Exactly, like, exactly. Yeah, it's like, what you like.
If you're fulfilled and that's doing what you're doing.
Now, would that fix your anxiety and depression? I don't know. There's a lot of comedians, right, who have whether they had a traumatic brain injury or they've had their own emotional issues. I mean, there's a lot of comedians, right, who are... who seek the who do with their comedy comes from a place of seeking validation or from their own inferior their feelings of inferiority, and it makes them better. I'm sure there's a lot of people in the film industry or whatever. There's whatever drives you, right? It makes you really good, but you know, does it fix their problems, right? We know a lot of you know, artists who aren't with us anymore due to those reasons. But you know, I think that if you can find what really you enjoy, then that can help a lot.
But it's fulfillment in everything. Because I've been doing really well, but then just eating like crap and not working out. And
we talked about this at the physical.
Yes, and it doesn't matter how well I'm doing. Like, I've worked out, I think, the past 60 days straight.
Really?
Yeah. I wake up every morning and I meditate before I look at my phone. And then I do yoga. And I used to run, but I was running every day and it was really a problem on my knees. They were hurting. So I've been doing the elliptical every day and then slight weights here and there. But yeah, yoga, meditation, and some form of cardio every day.
How long is your meditation for?
Like 15 minutes.
Really? Mm-hmm. Where does your mind go?
I've been practicing meditation since pre-COVID.
Yeah.
I dated a girl who used Headspace, and then she taught me how to use Headspace. You know what Headspace? It's a meditation app.
Huh.
And it taught, like, I did every single class that they had on that. And now I just sit, and I know how to get myself into that state. And I just do it every morning before I look at my phone.
Huh. That's neat.
Yeah.
Well, when you came to my house and you shook my hand, you not only look taller, but you look leaner. So.
Oh, well, I'm happy about that because I was, I was, see, that's what happened. I was just using fulfillment in work, and I was thinking that fulfillment was enough and pushing everything else to the side.
Yeah.
When you realize that it's better to, like, fill out the pie evenly, and then everything works better.
Yeah, the long-term plan.
Do you think society, this is more of a conspiracy question, do you think society is geared to make people not successful?
I think it would depend on where in society you are. You know, I think that looking at the country, you know, we'll look at the United States, for example, I think it depends on where you're located, unfortunately, and your socioeconomic status to begin with. But there are a lot of people who come from a high level and fail, and a lot of people come from a low level and succeed. So I don't know if society, I would say not, as you see, I'm not a big...
You don't like generalization.
I do not.
No, I
do
appreciate
not.
I
don't like that. I don't like that in medicine, you know, and I tell people, I'm not really a numbers guy. I know the data, but I'm not going to throw numbers at you. Yeah, I'm not big on, so I would say no. I live in Lexington. I came from Maine, Auburn, Maine. You know, my wife and I are from Auburn, Maine, small town in Maine. And I think we succeeded. You know, I think that we came from middle class upbringings, but you know, again, a small town. You know, I feel very successful. There are people from my town who are still in the town, and so successful what they do, but maybe couldn't have succeeded up to even higher potential. There are some people who, I mean, were CEOs of some major, from my high school, are CEOs of some major companies in the country, like really, really succeeded. And then there were people from the areas like Lexington, you know, which is a very high socioeconomic area, and I'm going down that path, who are doing very well, but they couldn't fail just because of who they were, you know, their financial status, if not their education. And there's some people who really squandered a lot of potential. I mean, it's really sad. So I think that. I don't know if I won't put it on all society, but I'm sure that someone who does a lot of, stuff looking at that would debate that very easily.
But you think, like, all right, fast food wasn't meant to make people lazy. Social media wasn't meant to take up people's time and make them anxious. Those are just unfortunate things that came from it.
I would say that, and I would say, I would say that they were marketed to the masses to be utilized a lot. But I don't think they recognized, I don't think the initial impetus behind that was to destroy society. You know, I think that I'm going on a limb here, but I don't think cigarettes were made to kill people. They were definitely made to make money and get people addicted, as was the vape, I mean, all these things, right? You know, but But yeah, I think fast food was meant, they knew it was gonna, you know, people were gonna like that, but it wasn't good for them. And that, you know, social media, I mean, I enjoyed my social media too, but that, you know, they knew it was gonna, you know, be addictive and affect, you know, everybody. I don't know if they knew how negatively it would affect people, right? I mean, it could affect everybody wonderfully, right? I mean, for me, I love Facebook because it's connected me with my high school friends a lot, or people in my past who I find people, you know, but it's also a time suck for me, right? And it's also—
But you also knew life without it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
A lot of people, like, when it's all they know, it's like driving. I only drove with GPS, so I don't know how to follow streets. Like, if someone says a street name or a highway, I don't know that highway because I only know GPS. But then if I don't have GPS, I'm going to be super duper anxious. And that's kind of like what screens are. It's like you only know this
point.
Is your contact. And then if that's not there, you don't know, like,
that's a great point.
Analog friendship.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it's interesting, as you say, even in medicine, right, that people, we, you know, will, you know, the email was one thing, but now with this patient portal, right, where you can interact with your doctor via the portal, I mean, the amount of traffic we get with that, which can be helpful, you know, that's how people communicate now, you know, and in pictures and videos versus visits, there's a lot that's affected, and you're right, you know, I came from having phones on my wall when I was a kid.
Did you have the...
The cord?
No, the where you had to like put your...
Oh, 100%.
What were those called? Did they have a
rotary
name?
Phones.
Rotary, all right.
Well, the best thing about those were in the old days, when people listened to radio, they would have call-in, you call in your 10th caller, 12th caller. And in my house, growing up in Maine, my father was way ahead of the curve. So my father grew up with nothing. So he loved technology. When he got his first black and white TV as a kid, that was a big deal on the block, right? And in my house, we had three lines. We actually had three phone lines. We had the house line, and we had the kids line. Because my sisters got older, they were always on the phone, and my dad didn't want the house phone tied up. And he had a line from his work that came into the house, too. So we had three phone lines, which was cutting edge in Auburn, Maine. But in the old days, you'd have like a call-in show for a radio, and they say, 15th calling wins tickets to go see whoever. So one of us, we each be on a phone, and you'd call, and they'd say... And everybody's calling at once back then, you know, but this is Auburn, Maine. WBLM, the blimp, was the radio station, BLM. And they say, your fifth caller. And you'd hold, and the other people would have their finger on the rotary dial with the last number. Like the, you know, the, what it was like, you know, 781-999. And right when you hung up, they let go. So they would hopefully be the next caller. And you'd keep doing that, just try to hit the things. You know, the rotary phone was fun.
Did you ever win?
We never won, but we try to do it that way. My dad actually was one of the first people in our town with a phone in his car, which was like a phone, like a military phone in the car with like a headset and a cord. And he'd be driving around town in his big black, he had a big black town car driving around town on his phone. And people were like, yeah, I saw your dad on his toy phone. The people didn't realize it was a real phone back then.
He thought he was just doing
it. Yeah, he was like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I came from a place in college where I used to write I met my wife in high school, but in ninth grade. But I used to write her a letter.
Really?
Yeah, I used to write her a letter like you had a one phone. Actually, we had lucky. We had phones in our dorm, in our room. A lot of people had phones on the hallway. But I would write her letters every day. You know, which is unheard of, right? It's all text and emails now. So.
Do you have good handwriting?
Awful. In fact, she used to share she went to Springfield College, and she used to share a mailbox with a football player, and that they shared mailboxes, and he would pull out the mail and say, oh, you got a letter from your little brother again, and that was my handwriting on the thing. I'm pretty bad, so.
How do you feel about the legalization of marijuana?
A lot of your listeners and viewers hope I don't get into trouble.
No, I would rather them actually have a basis from a medical professional than take their medical advice from whoever they're usually listening to.
I think that, you know, yeah, I don't have a... Yeah, I mean, I think I'm okay with it. I mean, for the age range, I think that it's a substance that, you know, with a, you know, informed adult, you know, could use. I don't think it's, you know, I think that people, I mean, cigarettes scare me, you know, in terms of, we know the danger of cigarettes. I'll get to maybe the answer to the question. I think that the vaping really bothers me. And in terms of we're going to find out 20 years from now what people did to their lungs, and it really scares me, actually. And there's a lot of stuff on social media about all things that happened, and some of that is a little bit trumped up. But there's some real stuff that has happened because of vapes, and that really worries me. I think in terms of a drug, marijuana, you know, I think we still, it's been around for a long time, right? And I think we have to recognize that it is a drug, and it does affect your mental state. We know that, you know. I think there are a lot of benefits from marijuana in terms of, you know, medical benefits, in terms of anxiety maybe, you know, in terms of, appetite, you know, with people who are undergoing different treatments. So there are benefits to it, but is it the best treatment for some of those things in terms of the risk-benefit ratio? So, for example, someone's getting chemotherapy for cancer, right, and their appetite's down. You know, with what they're going through, is smoking marijuana such a bad thing? No, I'd say. If someone has anxiety and they're smoking marijuana for that, and I'm going down this medical pathway right now, is that the best way to treat anxiety? Probably not, because it's a short-term fix and also can increase problems. I'm, and as I talk about the cigarettes and the vape, my reason I say that is I don't like the inhalations into your lungs. That really worries me. I know marijuana's got a lot less stuff in it than cigarettes, and I, you know, especially if it's, you know, grown, you know, it's cleaner. But so legalization-wise, I mean, I think it's a drug like alcohol, right? And alcohol has gotten a great rap over the years, as long as you don't abuse it, you know, and everybody's drinking alcohol. So, you know, I think marijuana, I think it's okay that it's legalized. I just be really careful about the misuse and the overuse, any use, I suppose. You know, I wouldn't be surprised, and I don't know if anybody's ever mentioned this, I wouldn't be surprised, you know, all these, so, you know, again, I'm going off on a tangent here, but, you know, everybody's growing it now, right? And everybody's. I used to work with one of my jobs in high school and college was I used to engrave and install tombstones. It's a great story.
But you work with people from all ages. No,
but the guy that I work with, he was working there for, like, you know, this was his life job. He was a craftsman at this. We'd go to different cemeteries in Maine, and he's like, "I'll be right back," and he would go into the woods for a while and come back. And after a while, like, "What are you doing now?" And he goes, "Oh, I just planted some marijuana here." He would plant marijuana in the cemeteries.
He was like Johnny Appleseed.
Yeah, he's the original, because he's like, no one's gonna find these, but he knew all the spots, you know. So I think it's better, you know. But he was growing it, but I think that, you know, now everybody's, you know, I go up to Maine, New Hampshire, everywhere, all these places are selling it, you know. And I wouldn't be surprised if at some point Big Pharma takes over, you know, and you can get
Big Pharma is taking over,
and you're gonna get your marijuana at CVS or Rite Aid before they all close up. Like, I have no problem with Marinol, which was a pill form of marijuana, which people used to use a lot for either pain or appetite, you know, improvement when they're getting treatments for certain things.
I never heard of that. Have you heard of that? Marinol?
Yeah. And so to me, it's safer to take in, you know. I just think about the risk to your lungs. Edibles, you know, edibles to me make a lot of sense, right? You know, if I'm going to give you Prozac for your anxiety, right, or an Ativan to go to sleep, you know.
You don't want to smoke in that Prozac.
or snorting it. I'm sure someone's done that somewhere, but I think that, but I'd much rather someone do an edible for, you know, at nighttime versus smoking. Yeah. I think my whole thing is the lungs. So I think legalization's okay. I think that it also takes away a little bit of the stigma. I think you gotta be careful when you're doing it, you know, I could smoke marijuana if I want to, right? I don't, but I could, but you wouldn't want me smoking a joint right before your visit, right? Yeah. You know, but I could.
You in a Rasta hat?
Yeah. Yo. But I think that, you know, I can't take a drink before work, you know, yeah. Which I don't. So I think, also, I've had guys come to the office, their physicals at 10 in the morning, and they I can tell they smoked, you know. I think we get a, so I think any drug, just because it's, you know, because it's not a cigarette, right? Which you can smoke any time, but not, you know, not really anywhere now. And it's not, and it's not alcohol. So it's somewhere in the middle. But I think we have to be careful of, it's legal, doesn't mean you can do it all the time, you know? So, you know.
Why is vaping so bad?
Because it's like...
I think vaping's bad too. I haven't vaped, I want to say that. I haven't had any nicotine or tobacco in like 6 years.
It's huge. That's a tough thing to caught. What, you smoking cigarettes?
I was smoking, cigarettes, yeah. And I was vaping a lot.
Yeah, I mean the cigarette—it's so addicting. I think the two toughest things, which you're addressing right now.
I was smoking a European cigarette, half tobacco, half weed, but it wasn't good. It was still tobacco.
Exactly. Did you have like a little thin little mustache?
I did. It came up and it curled, and I wore a beret.
Oh, that's way further than my image was.
Only drink red wine.
But you know, you're adjusting your eating habits, right? Mm-hmm. And you've quit those things. That's tough. I mean, nicotine is extremely addictive. No, just think about liquefied. Like, would you inhale? Would you? I like drinking. I don't know, maybe I say Kool-Aid, you know, I'm drinking now fruit juice, right? But I wouldn't want to inhale into my lungs, right? Mm-hmm. Your lungs aren't meant to break down that crap, you know? And you know, asbestos is a good example, right? You know, or you see all these people from, unfortunately, from September 11th who are dying or dead because of what they inhaled. They survived the day where they inhaled all that crap. So you think about what's going, this liquefaction of stuff that's going into your lungs, right? You know, it's just these macrophages in your lungs, whatever they, whatever they're called. You know, they're chomping on this stuff. They can't break it down well. And there's a lot of, you know, there's data, you know, stuff coming out, you know, a little bit more. But there was some really bad pulmonary events that happened, and people didn't quite know why, but they linked a lot to vaping. And that's the acute thing. I'm just worried again, you know. It's, you know, what's going to happen, you know, 10 years from now, you know, your lungs having to break down oil, you know, the oils that these things are in, right? The flavors that they're in, but your lungs don't like that. Your lungs aren't meant to do that. Your liver is kind of meant to break down alcohol within reason, right? Your spleen is meant to suck up all this bacteria, you know, within reason, you know. But your lungs don't like foreign stuff.
There's no natural way that smoking is.
I don't think so. You know, I mean, smoke inhalation's not good, right? You buy a fire for too long, that's not good for you, you know. So there's a reason.
You see, in China, everyone was wearing the mask because of the pollution.
Exactly, yeah. You know, I mean, firefighters wear masks for a reason, right? They go into a building. So vaping, I think there's better ways to, if you want nicotine, there's safer ways to do it. I guess there's gum. I save your lungs.
How do you feel about FDA just approving like Wegovy for children and those type of those
in the weight loss thing?
Yeah, the weight loss. Right?
Yeah, that's you know, this stuff's all studied pretty well, right? And I won't go into the vaccine stuff, you know, but the new ones coming out.
I would ask you about it, but this would probably get pulled off YouTube if we talk about it.
I think, you know, I'm, you know, for an adult, I weight loss is tough, you know. Losing weight is the toughest two things I think to do is, you know, common things are lose weight and keep it off and stop vaping or smoking. Those are tough things to do. I mean, alcohol's up there too. They're all addictions maybe, but it's tough. And there's a lot of people who want to be healthy but can't be. And I don't think, I mean, you think about the gastric bypass surgery, right? That should be your last thing to think about, but it works. And if it saves your heart and your liver and your life, go for it. I think that with Wegovy, the injections now, I'm not sure, you're ahead of me, I'm not sure what age they've gone down to. I mean, even gastric bypass surgery, you know, you didn't do it on adolescents. You waited till you recommended they were adults. I would hope that there are other ways to fix that, to fix the obesity. But I think that I'm not sold on it for adults personally either. You know, I think that it's a long-term process. It might be a short-term fix. I think we're still going to learn, you know, more things about it, the safety and the efficacy. So I wouldn't be in favor of that I mean, if someone that I respected as a specialist who deals with this in kids, and we have a lot of kids, I got a kid who I'm seeing in the office who's 180 pounds and 7 years old, you know, and he may be a good candidate for that. And if that helps, and we don't, you know, and we, you know, he's seen a lot of specialists, and he's the big guy, you know, and there's just some genetics there, you know, it wasn't his environment, you know, where he doesn't eat a lot, but he's a big boy, but maybe that would be good for him. So I think there's probably a role for it, but I wouldn't jump to it, you know, the average kid.
What's the best way someone who is overweight to lose weight? And not just like, all right, eat less, work out more. Like, what do you think? How does someone, you say it's one of the hardest things to do.
Eat less, work, less calories in, more calories out.
You need to beat the mental thing first.
For the average person. But then there's all the ways you can do it, whether it's intermittent fasting, whether it's lots of water, whether it's watching your carbs, you know, not eating after a certain time of night. I mean, all these things.
But it's like addiction. If you don't want the change, it's not going to happen.
Well, there's a lot of people who want the change, you know, so I don't want to minimize anybody who's overweight, who's really trying but can't do it. So having said that, that's for your average person. Eat less, more activity. That's your average person. But there's some people who don't eat a ton, and they do exercise, and you really look at their calories, and they're not losing the weight, you know? And so I respect that. You know, it's not that, you know, so they're trying, but there's something with the metabolism or something, you know, that they're just not losing the weight. But I really believe it's for your average person, for your baseline thing, it's not only how much, but it's what you eat, you know? And not processed
food.
Not even that, it's calorie, you know. I don't know if it's processed food. Well, yeah, processed food that has a lot of, you know, fats in it and carbohydrates in it.
But it's all calories.
I really believe it's calories, you know. And I think that in the diets, all these diets, and I've done a lot of these things. Like, I'm in decent shape, but I have a wicked family history of heart disease. I just came from my doctor's today, and I had a decent physical. But I think some of these diets work for certain people, you know. But I think that it's tough to maintain them. Even exercise, you know, is always tough to maintain at high levels. Yeah, I don't know if it's much. I'm not looking at the chemicals in the food specifically, but yeah, I mean, food with high fat, high salt, you know, stuff like that is going to get you. So.
Dope. How long? We did like an hour. We did like a whole hour already. Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy. Do you edit this?
Maybe, but yeah. Not really. I don't really like to edit.
No, it's fine.
Did you wanted to ask me some things? Did you have questions for me?
Yeah, I could. Yeah, I get some questions for you.
You said that.
I want to ask you. Two quick questions come to mind.
Right? Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, three quick questions. I mean, wow.
Also, thank you for doing this.
This is awesome. No, I could do this again. I mean, I love talking. I mean, are you nervous? How nervous were you getting on stage initially? How nervous are you now?
Like getting on stage now?
Yeah.
Getting on stage initially, super duper nervous. Now a little less nervous.
So you're still a little nervous.
Yeah. It's what we were talking about before. It's taking control of the anxiety. Mm. Before I had never felt the anxiety of like doing it, so it was a completely new feeling.
Yeah.
Now I know what that feeling's like,
yeah.
And I can take that and I can use that to harness it into energy. Because I feel like anxiety can be used. You can turn it into energy.
And when you get on stage and you have your bit or your, you know, how much of that do you, two-part question, how much of that do you stick to? And actually, three-part, how often do you get off topic and then try to get back into it again? And there's a lot of comedians now who really work off the audience, which I see that you do. Like,
I do a little bit. I would say, I mean, I would say 70% of my stuff is planned. Like 70% is planned, yeah. 30% is off the top.
Yeah.
I like to go up there. And I just like to sell myself. Like, I want them to know who I am. So at first I usually just talk. Just to be like, here I am. I'm not prepared. Like, here, and then I'll start getting into, like.
Yeah.
I like to, yeah. bring them down to my level at first.
And when you get off, so during the show, if you get off, like someone, you know, says something and you go off that, is it tough to get back into your, I mean, it's interesting as a comedian, like how is that?
No, I mean, it's kind of like this conversation. If you said something that made me want to like go off on that tangent, I'll ask a question about that. But really, like I have a through line. Like I do it a lot. I perform a lot. So it's something, I mean, everything's the same. It's probably like you. How nervous were you doing your first physical versus like now? But you have a lot more years under your belt. Yeah, yeah. So you're like, you just know it now. You know the routine. Yeah. You know if the kid's nervous. You know how to like make them less nervous. It's just, stand up is like music, but the audience is the instrument. Like you play the audience. And that's what it is. Like, you're just playing with their emotion. You're seeing how they are. You have to be really good at, like, reading energy. What's the energy of this audience? Are they angry? Oh, are they not laughing? Like, am I going to make fun of them? Or are they going to get mad that I'm making fun of them? Do they just want to hear joke, joke, joke? Do they want to be talked to? It's like, that. They're the instrument.
That's great. And knowing your mom, what's your feeling of, like, what you're doing? If not your content or what you're doing.
That's so funny. No one would ever ask this question. And she's probably listening to this right now. I think at first, it was a little wild. And I don't know if she loves, I don't think either of my parents love the content of what I'm doing. But I think at this point, it's undeniable that it's something. What that something is, I don't know. But ever since when I first told them, like when I graduated college and I was like, this is what I am going to do, I think they saw that it would be pretty much impossible to knock me off the path. It would be really, even to myself, like there's no matter what, if I have to go get a job at Amazon to keep doing it, even though I'm getting millions of listens, I'll do that to keep it going. Like I don't really care. Other than what we were talking about before, the fulfillment. And I think no matter what the content is, I hope they see that I'm fulfilled and they see that people are actually listening. I mean, today I got nominated for Best Comedy Podcast. I was able to speak at Harvard. An article was written about me in the Harvard Crimson. Like that's crazy to me. I could have never gotten into Harvard. I got to do that. I got to headline Nick's Comedy Stop, and they both got to see a packed room of me headlining. Some of their favorite artists I've been able to interview. Like, my dad's a musician, and he never got on a vinyl. I'm now on two vinyls. Like, he never got us, like, free ticket. And this isn't downing him, it's just, he never got us like free tickets because he knew an event. Like I got us free tickets to see Weezer because I knew the opening band. I was Future Islands, and I interview Sam Herring. My dad like framed those tickets, but to me it's like, oh yeah, I get tickets to shows all the time. But it's like, it's undeniable that something is happening, and I think no matter what it is, it's kind of hard to not support that.
That's huge. And last question is, you know, from your upbringing and background, like the majority of your podcast, you know, your genre, like how'd you fall into that?
Oh, that's my parents' fault 100%. They fucked up. Excuse my language. Like my mom and I were driving one day and she's like, when we were in the car when you were a kid, all we listened to was rap and stand up. She goes, did I cause this?
Yeah.
And I kind of like laughed, but I was like, yeah, my dad listened to rap. My mom listened to rap. Like, that's what they love.
Yeah.
So, like, they like to play stand-up. They like to play inappropriate stand-up. Like, if they, it's their fault if they, like, that's why it's kind of like, it's things they liked, but I think you can like something. You know the singer The Weeknd?
Yeah.
I was listening to an interview with him once. He was talking about how he used to be homeless, like living in his car. And now he's the biggest singer, literally the most streamed singer in the world. But no one supported him when he was living in his car. It was just like his dream. And now everyone's like, that's so cool, he lived in his car. It's like you kind of need that adversity. You kind of need the like people not believing into you so you can believe in yourself.
That's great. Cool, man. That's awesome.
This is really fun.
Yeah.
I'm happy we got to do this.
I wish you the most success. That's awesome.
Well, you're going to have to see me in a couple months anyway.
I'd love to. I was trying to get to see you at Knicks, you know, but I didn't get in there.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you were trying to get a physical.
No. I was trying to.
We can do it down here.
I'm going to have to hit you up for some tickets, too, for something. So there you go. Cool. Well, good.
Thank you.
Is that all good?
Yeah. I hope this doesn't get you in. I purposefully tried not to ask you things that would get you in trouble.
That's all right.
At your practice, because you do work with children, and they can be like, let me see what my child's doctor's up to.
No, that's great.
And they see, they see me.
No, I mean, I hold you in high esteem. I've got a couple guys who played MLB baseball, right? I got one guy who got cut for the Browns. I got another guy that won a Grammy, and it's you.
Really?
Yeah. And that guy was
I was about to ask you who, but you can't tell me.
well, I can tell you. You know, Chris Shaw from Lexington played for the Giants. He's on his way down. He played for the Baltimore too. Sal Frelick, do you know Sal? He's from Lexington. He's like 23. He's playing for the Brewers.
Wow.
This guy's.
Did you just crack your knee like that? That was crazy. He pressed that.
That's great. I can help you with that.
Yeah, can you?
Yeah. Every couple hours.
If you want to pay for the Patreon, it's Frank getting a. It's Frank getting a physical. Subscribe on Patreon.
Oh, good. That's great.
What did you think I was gonna be as a kid? Yeah, I would like to know that. What did you think my path was gonna be? Or who was I as a kid? I don't have a good memory of it.
You were really, it was a nice young man. And I didn't know what your path was going to be. I just thought you were going to be, you were going to succeed in something, you know. And I thought that I saw sports in your future a little bit in the short term, like in college. Mm-hmm. But that's just because, maybe from your dad. And I don't know what your career was going to be. I didn't think about that. But you still have that simpleness in that. You know, again, you know, with what you do for pods, maybe one thing to say, but you still have this pure sense to you. Like you're still a nice guy. You always were a nice young man, very respectful and pretty. I'd say, from my perspective, pretty morally sound. I just saw you on this kind of this. Straight path, you know. I know where you're gonna end up, but nothing. If you had said to me, I didn't know you wanted to do comedy, right? If someone said to me, oh, he's gonna be a comedian, I'm like, that wouldn't be my top 20, you know.
Yeah.
Something generic. I saw.
I think I was too nice as a kid.
Yeah.
Like I didn't see the darkness of the world or of situations behind me.
Yeah.
And then when the world showed who I was, I still am the nice person, but I do find it funny that I think where being a comedian comes from is the humor of no matter how nice I was, I still had to deal with darkness. Mm. No matter how like good I was, no matter how like just wanting to be, it was like, so now I'll play into it. I'm still a good, still a nice person, but I do find it funny that I can be seen as who I am, but I'm still that same person.
Did you feel that darkness when you were younger?
It started creeping in as I got farther on, you know? And then I think that happens with a lot of kids, and I think that is the problem with marketing to children and, like, Disney. Is it's like you Disney and all that children's toys and everything makes you think when you're a kid that there is no darkness because it's all just like princesses and knights and toys and everything.
Yeah.
And then you don't see, you get to play a video game. You don't see the shit happening behind you.
Yeah.
And that will ruin. I think that's when anxiety takes over for a lot of kids is they just thought everything was good, and then one day they wake up and they don't know how to deal with it. Instead of realizing that there's good and there's bad, But I think a lot of parents had bad upbringing, so they want to shelter their kids from that, but they shelter their kids too much from that. Mm. To the point where then when the real world hits, it's hard to deal with it.
Yeah. I also think that a lot of parents didn't have hard upbringings, but they still sheltered their kids from the world. And that's a problem.
They think. Mm.
But I think they also, yeah, I mean, if you asked me, like I say, oh, I would have been, I might be a comedian. If you'd asked me, you know, how old am I, 55, so minus 30 years, if I wanted to be a comedian, no, I wouldn't have thought about that, right, back then. But now I just find like I like making people happy and sharing. Like I'm not really a comedian. I wouldn't be a comedian. I like sharing life stories that are funny, that are entertaining, right? So I could do like you ever listen to The Moth Hour?
Mm-hmm.
Like I could, yeah. That to me, like that's, you know, just like sharing stuff. Like I love sharing stuff and making people say, that's a good story. I like telling stories, like my dad did. But I think that, you know, but if you look back, yeah, I was shaped a certain way too. I was shaped, you know, in terms of like, you know, maybe comedy was a defense mechanism, you know, being funny, right? You know, but it's interesting. Yeah, again, going back to you saying, like you already had some insight back then of what you wanted to be, you know, and you know, it's great that you were able to tap into that now. Mm-hmm. You know, if you ask me, what would I be all over again? If I could choose any job right now, what would I do? I'd be a pediatrician. I'd do it all over again. I'd love it, right? But it would suck if I was 55 and said, damn, I want to be a comedian. I really wish I was. I'm not happy with my job, right? And you killed it, right?
But I think you have to find something that you enjoy the struggle for. A lot of people want to be a comedian, but I don't think they want the struggle behind it.
Yep.
They don't want... Do you ever see the movie The Menu? It came out last year?
No.
It's like a thriller movie about this restaurant, whatever. But the guy, the head chef of it, was like, do you want my life? To the sous chef. He's like, not my accolades, but my life. And the guy's like, no. And whatever. But it's like, do you want the life or do you want the accolades? Do you want what comes with it? Do you want that my car's 2 years old and has 125,000 miles and I'm by myself a lot? And people that I look up to are sometimes hella rude to me.
Yeah.
And I struggle. Like, I still live with my mom. Like, it's not like I'm making hella money. I had a good job out of college. It's like, but I do it all just to feel fulfilled. Like, do you want that?
Yeah.
Or do you want to go up and make people laugh for that 10 minutes that you're making them laugh? And I think whatever you choose, you have to think, do you want the accolades from it or do you want the life that comes with it?
Well, yeah, people go into fields, you know, because they want to make the money, right? Mm-hmm. In my field specifically, not that, you know, there's always the money in it, but if you chase the money, then that's the wrong thing. Like I'm saying, you got to choose what you want to do, you know, for whatever reason you want to do it. And there's a lot of work that goes into it. But if I was a doctor because I wanted to make money, you know, I mean, I got to make a decent living, but it's the intangibles, right? It's what you gain from it, right? And yeah, you got to put the work in. It's 100%.
Thank you for doing this.
Cool.
Peace out, everyone.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Hey, man.